Hello and welcome to the Beyond Biotech podcast number 86. I'm Jim Cornell and this is the weekly podcast from LeBiotech. This week we're on the trail of artificial intelligence and machine learning with a company that is mapping the immune system to help improve drug discovery. The company is ImmuneI, and we had a conversation with the company's co-founder and CEO, Noam Solomon.
Okay, so I guess the easy first question is if you could tell me a bit about the company.
Sure. So the name is ImmuneI, and it stands for some combination of immunology and AI. We started about 5.5 years ago with the vision to fully map the immune system with hardcore engineering and AI.
You're mapping the immune system. What's the reason for doing that, I guess, initially?
Right. So the immune system is really implicated in every health condition, you know, our response to therapeutics, how we cope with viral and bacterial infections, how we age. And we understood early on that if we want to improve the therapeutic development process, we want to study the kind of common denominator to all disease, which was the immune system. So this was the core reason for that.
Often we try and tackle issues without really knowing what comes before it. Is it a case of kind of taking one step back to try and fill in the picture before you move forward?
Exactly. I think that when you study a cancer patient and you study the biopsy of the patient, it's already when it's a very late stage, right? If you can study the immune system, you can study it even before the patient had cancer, and you can also look at the common denominator, because there are similarities and relevance between patients that have melanoma and patients that have dermatology autoimmune conditions. They are not similar, but they are in some sense maybe opposite. So deciding to study the immune system is allowing us to really look at the root cause analysis for drive disease all over, and then we can start figuring out different mechanisms one after another.
Is it a very difficult thing to do to be able to map the immune system? And would it be possible without artificial intelligence?
Yeah, when we started, I remember one of the more prominent biotech investors told me that, you know, it sounds great, but the immune system is infinitely complex. I'm a mathematician, and mathematicians love to count things, even infinities. So to me, the immune system was and still is incredibly complex. But we believe that by mapping the human immune system, by mapping thousands and then tens of thousands and then even millions of patients, we will be able to map the human immune system and then apply computational models and AI to try to decode, again, the root cause analysis and figure out the immune intelligence that is needed to make better decisions and develop better therapeutics. So the complexity can be matched if we put strong enough compute power and strong enough models to tackle it. And we are still in the early days of this endeavor.
Could you tell me what AMICA, the drug discovery program, is?
AMICA stands for Annotated Multiomic Immune Cell Atlas. And it stands for the database that we have been building over the past 5.5 years. And it's kind of the core IP that is driving everything that we do on top of it. So AI or machine learning means nothing if you don't have a database that is large enough and smart enough and clean enough to run complex and expensive models on it. We've been measuring the immune system first from human patients that are being treated with immune-modulating drugs for oncology, for autoimmunity, and for other immune-mediated diseases. So that means that we are looking into a cohort of patients, could be, let's say, 50 or 100 patients, different time points before and after a drug has been administered. And we're trying to compare or mine or dissect the differences between responders to the drug and non-responders to the drug, or patients that have a toxic event, so, you know, a side effect. We want to understand why. The ability to put contrasting and then leverage computational models to find the features that underscore the difference between the responders and non-responders, between toxic events and non-toxic events, between healthy people and disease patients, is allowing us over time to better understand how to improve the drug discovery and drug development process.
And how are you collating that data? Where is it all coming from?
It comes from a few different sources. The first source is collaborations. So we work with a large network of academic partners, hospitals all over the world, biotech and biopharma companies that are coming to us with their own drugs, and they are giving us access to patients in clinical trials. And so that means that they are giving us the access to the biospecimens, so the biosamples from the patients being treated with the drugs. And we are performing our immune profiling, which is taking the samples, for example, the peripheral blood samples, and then running our processing and sequencing that we do in the lab that we have in New York. We generate a lot of data from every patient. We generate thousands of different immune cells. And for each cell, we generate, you know, more than 10,000 different genes and hundreds of proteins and other parameters. And so it's a large data set, even from one patient. We usually take a cohort of patients that are treated with the same drug or similar drugs, and we compare them. This is the first type of data. The second type of data is the preclinical work that we do in the lab. So we do a lot of functional genomics work that we do preclinically, in vitro and ex vivo, so work that we do purely in cells. We also do work in vivo, so that means in animals, especially in mice. And the third type of data is the data that is published in the public domain. So every time an academic center or university publishes a result in peer-reviewed journal like Nature Medicine, the data is being uploaded to the server. We are going to have access to the data. We're going to curate and ingest the data into Amica. So these are the three sources of the data that keeps feeding Amica and keeps growing Amica.
How does it account for the variability between patients? I mean, there are some diseases where some people will respond to a drug and others don't. And are you able to kind of extrapolate any conclusions from any of that?
Yeah, so first it's endeavor of big numbers. If you take the most successful immunotherapy, a PD-1 therapy that has been given for over a decade now, this is a drug that is given to patients, standard of care for melanoma-treated patients, non-small cell lung cancer, and other indications. It doesn't work for anyone. It works for some patients, it doesn't work for others. Our platform is dissecting and analyzing the kind of root cause for why certain patients are responding and others don't. And ideally, we are going to infuse more and more and more data, not for one drug, for many drugs. I think about Amica as a knowledge sphere, so think about a sphere of knowledge that is growing. But in reality, there are a lot of holes in this sphere, so maybe more like a Swiss cheese. And over time, we're able to identify the holes or the gaps and then infuse more data to bridge the gaps and close the holes. It's 5.5 years in the making. It's probably going to take us another 5 or 10 years to keep building the database and kind of multiply it every year. But as the data grows and the knowledge gaps are closed, we're able to find relevant insights that will explain us why certain patients will respond to drugs and others won't, and how to find the next generation of therapeutics that are going to overcome the resistance mechanisms.
What do you see as the biggest challenges currently and the biggest issues facing drug development?
Maybe most plainly, I'll take a step back and say that to me, the main driver of technology development, or especially in high tech in the past 3-4 decades, was the improvement in compute power. You know, what was framed as Moore's law of engineering, that every, you know, few years you see doubling of compute power because you can compress more transistors into a specific space. In drug development, you have the opposite law called Aaron's law. So over time, with a fixed amount of dollars, you can develop less drugs. And more precisely, less drugs are going to get FDA approval. And there are many reasons for that. First, there is more competition than there was, like, let's say, 20 or 30 years ago. There are a lot more approved drugs, and new drugs need to be superior to approved drugs. So before it was a blue ocean, now it's not so much a blue ocean. In the US, the regulator is becoming more rigorous. They want to see more data convincing the drugs are indeed doing what they are supposed to do. So all of these reasons and others are leading to a very poor FDA approval. So I think in oncology, going from a drug candidate that has been IND approved to an FDA approved drug, the statistics is less than 10% success. And I think related to it, the return on investment on a discovered drug is becoming much less compelling, even negative soon. And so that means that pharma companies and biotechnology companies are gradually moving away from investment in drug discovery, and they prefer to invest in later stage assets that are already cleared in the phase one and phase two. And I think that if this is going to continue and persist, this trend, we are going to see less innovation, and that's not good for, you know, patients. So I hope that with platforms like Immunai, where we are aiming to improve the statistics, to improve the phase one success rate, to improve the phase two success rate, and hopefully it will lead to better ROIs, and we're going to see further investments in the early phases, because that's very important to invest in innovation and to improve patients' outcome from the beginning.
How do you think that artificial intelligence and machine learning will be able to improve drug development?
So I view AI as part of a bigger issue, which is you want to combine together a few different pieces and stitch them into a platform. In our case, we have a vertically integrated platform that combines together wet lab capabilities, single cell sequencing technologies, functional genomic gene editing capabilities that generate a new type of data modality to profile the immune system. And we generate a new type of data, and we have a lot of engineering infrastructure to curate the data, ingest the data, harmonize the data, reduce all the noise in the data. And on top of this, you apply more sophisticated AI or machine learning that allow you to mine the data and uncover the immune intelligence. And so I think the vertical integrated nature of the platform is very important, and not just the AI. But if we are going to go down this development path, you know, 5, 10 years from now, I strongly believe there is a possibility to significantly improve the statistics of clinical trial design. So that means to improve in a clinical trial for a given compound, what is the optimal dose and schedule for the clinical trial? What is the right combination agent to give the drug with? What are the right patient segments to get the drug and others that should not get the drug? And all of these questions can be transformed by the right tools, again, vertically integrated tools that combine lab capabilities with computational capabilities. On top of this, I think that there is a momentum to start looking at molecules earlier on the preclinical stage, analyze how the molecules are interacting with, you know, cell-to-cell interactions or interactions, perturbations in earlier preclinical models, in vitro, ex vivo, and in vivo, and be able to predict or deduce what will happen later in the clinical stages. It's still a hope. Nobody was able to do it properly, but I believe that by creating the right data sets and applying the right tools, we are going to see a transformation in this direction.
As machine learning and artificial intelligence improve, will that speed up the process?
Yes, and I think what we are seeing in other spaces, like text or natural language processing, and then video or computer vision, what we see is that if you are able to curate and harmonize large data sets, the new AI models are really able to make a dent in more classical ways to analyze data. I believe the same is going to happen in chemistry, biology, immunology, and the better the models get, the better the statistics will get, and we will get better results.
Do you think that it's going to apply to pretty much every disease and condition, or do you think that there will be some diseases that are more responsive to the data that you can get through AI?
Yeah, it's a great question. First, our approach is to study the immune component of disease. So while most diseases have an immune component, some are really kind of immune mediated, for example, cancer, and others are the immune component is weaker or more confounded by other variables. For our platform, we are trying to target the indications and the modalities that are most relevant for the immune system. Of course, there are certain indications where you don't have access to a lot of patient samples because they are more rare, etc. So the ability to also have not only immune-mediated indications and drugs, but also to have access to a lot of data is another condition. But I believe that for our platform, the access to many patient samples in immune-mediated diseases, there is a true potential to unlock important decisions with this platform.
There's a lot of people, I guess, working on diseases using artificial intelligence. What is different about yours that sets it apart from others?
I think Immunize approach from the beginning was to concentrate on the immune system first, and I think it's already pretty differentiated. We took a bet on single cell technologies, so we are really mapping every cell separately and not using more older technologies. So really sticking to the cutting edge technology to profile the immune system, I think it's quite differentiated. We measure the genomics, the proteomics, the epigenomics, so we really go kind of full scale, the multimodal profiling. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we have the vertically integrated aspect that allows us to combine the wet lab side with the computational side. And on top of all these things, we have been building over the past 3, 4 years the analytical framework that is called the Immunodynamics Engine. So it's an engine driven by AI that, like in pharmacology, you study the pharmacodynamics of a drug. We study the immunodynamics of a drug, really trying to understand exactly how a drug is impacting the immune system, both in the peripheral immune system and in the disease. And this immunodynamics engine is our secret sauce and our approach that allows us to really understand how drugs impact patients and also how they impact mice and other ex vivo and in vitro model systems. As far as we know, we are leading the space of kind of immune-mediated diseases with this approach.
You've already received quite a bit of funding. I wonder if you could tell me about some of the partnerships that you're developing and I guess how ultimately that will help patients.
Right. So I think our investors and our leadership understood that to map the human immune system is going to take time and it's going to take money. And there was a commitment of resources to do that. But also, we have really great partners. We work with 5 of the top 15 pharma companies and growing. And together, we are getting access to, the most cutting edge or the next generation therapeutics and the clinical trials or the preclinical development steps, where our platform is being asked to recommend decisions for preclinical and clinical decisions. The access to more cutting edge drugs and to more patient samples is really growing Amica and our immunodynamics engine. And so these partnerships I'm very grateful for, and I'm very happy to see that more and more partners identify the value that the platform provides.
Are companies looking to this for the information that you can provide to them in terms of developing drugs, or is it more to fill in the gaps in what's already known?
I think it's a combination. There are certain decisions that pharma companies and biotechnology companies are making that are very expensive. They are kind of junction. You need to go right or left. And, as a pharma executive, you're going to spend a lot of money and time of your team trying to make a decision. Sometimes they would come to us to support the decision or see if we have concerns. And sometimes it's going to be to maybe a new decision should be kind of brought to bear. And so I think it's a combination. As I mentioned earlier, we care about improving patient outcomes, and we really believe that the platform gets better every time we inform a decision because more data is flowing into Amica, more data is being ingested into the immunodynamics engine. And if some decision was wrong, the algorithm is going to get it better next time. So I think there is an iteration or iterative process that every iteration we get slightly better, and more data is coming and flowing into the machine, we get better and better. I think over time, at least I hope over time, with the statistics being published and readily available, we are going to really inform decisions, you know, end to end.
I think one of the things that has been clear with the use of AI and machine learning when it comes to drug discovery is it can reduce the number of failures that happen, which are extremely expensive. Are there other ways that you think that it's benefiting? I mean, does Amica, for example, change the timing of clinical trials potentially, or does it change the entire model of clinical trials?
Right. So first, the decisions that are in being kind of made for a clinical trial involve, for example, choosing the optimal dose or the choosing the optimal combination agent or choosing the optimal indications to go after. Our platform can really inform these decisions. So for example, if you're trying to develop a drug and you don't know which of the top 10 oncology indications you want to go after, and we tell you, you need to go after those three and ignore the rest of the seven others. If you trust us and we are right, we saved you a lot of time in the process, not just money and not just better statistics. I think time is really of the essence, probably even more than the money, because the pharma companies, they have the money. If it would take them 7 years versus 4.5, it can really change the game because they compete with other companies for the same, you know, approval. Second, I think that there is also a question of what is the ultimate use of a platform like ours? Is it only to improve clinical trials, or can we do other things? And I think we can already inform better decisions from preclinical stages. So if we can look at our platform, we have a lot of data or similar drugs that have been tested. We can inform a decision, including don't go ahead with this drug for the clinical trial and go with a different one. It's also a very important decision to be made and can save a lot of time and money. And the third aspect, which is still a dream, and maybe it's only for 15 years from now, but you asked in the beginning, why do we go after the immune system? And the immune system is kind of the core reason for what we are able to do differently before people are getting sick. If you are able to identify someone before they get cancer, let's say a year before, maybe you can give preventive care. It's going to be much, much better. And I think preventive medicine with this approach of immune monitoring patients is really where the platform can add value in the long run. So these are the three aspects: improving the clinical trials, making better decisions in the preclinical stages for what are the right programs to go after, and later also preventive care.
Do you think that there's more that can be done with AI in preventative care?
I am intimately convinced that with more data monitoring people still when they are healthy, there is so much to be done about preventive care. It's not just about diagnostics for patients that have early signs of cancer. I'm talking about being able to start identifying small variants in parameters, even a year or two or three before people are going to get sick. This is something that I believe will take more time, but it's very much a possibility, not only in my mind, I think in many others. It would require, you know, a combination of forces of people that would want to make an impact in this direction. The healthcare system should also be tuned into improving the results and the value for people that are insured, for example. But in terms of, can we identify signals in people's health before they get sick? I believe it's only a matter of decision. Technologies evolve very quickly. AI is becoming stronger and faster than before. And it's only a matter of time and decision.
And I guess it's not just a case of being able to see the signs, but also being able to see what it is that you can do that can prevent those changes occurring.
Yeah, exactly. I think a few years ago, I described what we are doing as kind of Google Maps for the immune system. But in Google Maps, it's not just to say where you are, but also if you want to go from point A to point B. If we have the human immune system and you are in point A and you want to get to point B, if we are able to understand this, we should be able to guide you in the right direction. And again, it's still preliminary. I think therapeutics is kind of the most straightforward decision because you go, either left or right. Maybe if you are, starting to feel maybe a bit dizzy, maybe you don't sleep as well at night, maybe you feel that your results as you are running 10 kilometers are not as great as it was a month ago, and you start monitoring something, what are the decisions to be made? Change the diet, change. So these are the type of questions that have not been addressed properly. But I think you're absolutely right that this is the kind of where the future is going to take us if we want to dedicate time and money to go there.
And the potential savings by preventing disease are probably exponentially greater than curing people.
You're right, but let's say that I'm telling you that by using our platform, you're going to remain healthy. The pain that people that are healthy are feeling for staying healthy is not the same of someone who is sick that wants to get better. And this is why I think right now it's also a question of a decision, not a decision of the people that are healthy, but a decision of the industry that this is possible and we want to incentivize investments or financing to develop platforms and companies that are going to keep people healthy and prevent them from getting sick.
I mean, I know it's difficult to kind of predict, but what do you think will happen in the next year, 18 months, 2 years with AI and the healthcare system?
So I think in the next 2, 3 years, we are going to start seeing more success stories. I think the past 5 years, there was a lot of hope. And then this hope was described as hype because we didn't see a lot of success stories. But I feel that the next 3 years, probably we're going to start seeing success stories. And these success stories are going to, I hope at least, are going to create a momentum and a wave for more companies to invest in novel therapeutics, novel diagnostics, and preventive care. I think it's going to be a very interesting decade.
And what about for specifically for your company? What are the next steps in the next year to 2 years?
We are very committed to making the work that we are doing with our partners successful. We really want to demonstrate that our GPS or our platform that can improve patient outcome, first in clinical trials, and then also in preclinical development is successful. And that's going to be the main use of the platform in the next 2 years. We have a lot of things that we haven't announced yet, multiple directions all around the immune system and allowing us to demonstrate that the platform can really inform the right decisions and the right recommendations for clinical development and preclinical development.
Some areas of technology are developing much more quickly than others, and AI is definitely at the forefront, constantly changing and rarely out of the news, and clearly it's going to stay that way. Definitely many applications in drug discovery to come. Don't forget to check out the latest news and articles at lebiotech.eu, and I hope wherever in the world you are, you have a great week ahead. Thanks for listening. And I hope you'll join us again next time for another Beyond Biotech.